Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, June 8th, 2023. We have two cases on our calendar for today, both set for oral argument via Zoom. This is the second of the two. This is A23-0279, Dowd v. Slordal et al. And please forgive me if I've mispronounced either name. Feel free to correct me when you introduce yourselves. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes for appellant on rebuttal. We will be following all the normal rules of protocol and etiquette for this hearing, with the exception, of course, that you don't have to worry about standing. We will be recording this. No other recording is permitted, but you will have access to audio recording of this oral argument within a few days after. And with that, counsel for appellant, if you are ready, please state your name for the record, party you are representing, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Matt Hanka. I'm with the Freiberger Law Firm in Duluth. I represent appellant Adam Dowd in his appeal of a summary judgment holding from the St. Louis County Court in the 6th Judicial District. This case relates to failed disclosures of material facts in a residential home sale. The respondent's sellers failed to disclose that the home that they sold to Mr. Dowd was known to them to have a meth house history. Indeed, the evidence shows that the respondents called the home the meth house themselves when talking to others prior to the sale, but they didn't disclose that to Mr. Dowd prior to the sale. The failed disclosure precluded Mr. Dowd from making a fully informed purchase.
What's the evidence that it's one thing to know that it was used to the home was used in the use or sale of methamphetamine? It's another thing altogether to have knowledge of contamination. So what's the evidence of that?
Well, correct, Your Honor. The respondents did not necessarily know that there was contamination. The fact that they should have disclosed is the fact that they knew enough about the home's history to classify it themselves as a meth house, which then would have allowed my client to do his due diligence and actually test the home. And if we So the material fact that should have been disclosed is the sordid and troubling history, a history that gave the respondents enough knowledge to classify the home themselves as a meth house. We can look at a lot of
Let me make sure I understand it. The sordid and troubling history that meth had been used in the house or that other criminal activity had occurred there. What is the material fact?
Sure. The information that the respondents knew about the home prior to selling it to Mr. Dowd was that it was dangerous. It was in terrible condition. They knew this from prior MLS listings. They also knew, based on conversations with others and perhaps even their own observations, that it was a home where widespread drug and criminal activity occurred. They also knew that the home was going to be torn down by a previous owner because of its dangerous condition. The MLS listings for the home, well, they bought the home as is, but the MLS listing for the home said that that buyers or potential buyers would enter at their own risk. And then they knew enough about what they gathered through these various sources, through conversations with their agent, presumably, through reviewing the MLS listings, through their own observations and discussions with neighbors. They knew enough to call the home a meth house.
So, if I understand you, I think what you're saying is the possibility of the meth use in the house causing contamination is what was material and should have been disclosed.
Right. We're asking that they disclose the information that they had. And that information is that they knew enough to classify it as a meth house, and there was this concern, therefore, that there could be contamination. We're not asking them to disclose information that they don't have. Had they disclosed the information they had, my client would have been able to do due diligence, test the property, make an informed decision as to whether he wanted to buy it. you know, whether that's through testing or whether it's through a reduced offer for a purchase price.
Do you agree that if we reversed on that basis, we would be establishing a rule of law that a seller who knows of drug use, prior drug use occurring in the house, always has a duty to disclose that that drugs were used in the house?
Well, I think in this case, the remand is appropriate. I don't necessarily think it's appropriate in all cases.
What would be the rule of law then to distinguish this case from the cases I just described generally?
Well, the rule of law would be whether we look at the general rule of law as to when a court can dismiss a case as a matter of law, right? When reasonable minds cannot differ as to the materiality of the information. In this case, that is our main point, is that the court erred because we believe a reasonable jury could determine that the information that these sellers had was material for the purpose of the disclosure statute. And the statute itself defines the duty, and it uses very broad language, 513.55. It requires a written disclosure of all material facts of which a seller is aware that could adversely and significantly affect a buyer's use and enjoyment. You know, it's purposefully broad. And for that case, I believe by its very design, it requires a fact finder determination in the cases where reasonable minds can't differ.
So let me ask you this. I think I understand what your argument is about the question of materiality, your position on that. Let's turn to the question of the respondent's awareness. That's a big argument they make, is that we didn't have personal knowledge. And, you know, the disclosure statements themselves, the 513.55 subdivision 1B talks about the best of the seller's knowledge at the time of the transaction. How do you respond to the argument that these sellers didn't have any knowledge? They had a bunch of hearsay knowledge, and that does not constitute the awareness required under the statute?
Well, I guess, first of all, I would say that the statute does not preclude hearsay evidence. You know, hearsay is an evidentiary rule in the court, but the statute does not say hearsay is precluded from being a material fact that needs to be disclosed. I think what I want to stress is that it's not just, you know, again, there's this universe of information that they had, that some of it came from others, some of it came from reading MLS listings, but they internalized this information to the extent that they were able to form the opinion that the house was a meth house. They called it that in discussing it with other people. I think the best way to explain this is through an example, we can go to say a water intrusion example. A buyer may not know that there's mold or water damage behind walls, just like in this case, the sellers may not have known that there was contamination by methamphetamine. However, if the seller knows that there's a condition that leads to water leaking into the walls or water leaking into the home, that is the point, the material fact that needs to be disclosed. So really, the contamination is a red herring in this case. We're not asking them to disclose the information that they don't have. We're asking them to disclose the information they had, that they knew enough to classify the home as a meth house.
Well, your hypothetical doesn't quite work, does it? I mean, if a seller knows that water is leaking into the home, that has to be disclosed regardless of whether it causes mold. I think so that's a different question. I mean, your analogy, as I understood it, was for the purpose of determining whether there is a mold contamination, you have to disclose the knowledge of water intrusion. But in this case, the intrusion analogy would be, the water intrusion would be knowledge that the home was used for methamphetamine use. And that itself, I think you acknowledge that that itself is not the problem. The problem is the contamination, not just the use.
Well, the problem is disclosing under the statute. The statute requires that all material facts be disclosed. And in this case, my point is that knowing that a home had a history that enough of a history that you would classify the home as a meth house should be disclosed so that a buyer can go in with their eyes open, do due diligence, perhaps test the home, and perhaps offer a less of an offer for the home. Again, you know, we're not asking them to disclose information that they don't have. We're asking them to disclose the information that they gathered from various sources that, you know, was enough for them to classify the home as a meth house. I'd like to return to, you know, we've kind of been jumping around a little bit, but I'd like to return to the point that we believe the district court supplanted the jury by making a factual determination on the materiality of the respondent's personal knowledge. As I mentioned earlier, case law establishes that materiality is ordinarily a question of fact. Here again, as I mentioned, the statute is broad. It says that a seller must disclose all material facts that could adversely and significantly affect the buyer's use and enjoyment. So the very statutory language contains the materiality language. You know, questions for the jury are, was the respondent's knowledge material? Was there knowledge that they had garnered from discussions with others, from reviewing MLS listings, from their own observations, was that material knowledge that should be disclosed? By design, I believe that's a jury question and not a summary judgment determination. And we believe that the district court erred in not submitting that to a jury.
Is it ever, I mean, at some point, doesn't it become a question of law, or do you disagree with that? I mean, if it's too attenuated. In this case, you've got a prior owner who hears information from other people who themselves didn't indicate that they actually saw any violation. It was a suspicion. So neighbors had suspicions. They passed those suspicions on to the new homeowner, and the new homeowner has to disclose what? That the neighbors suspected without actual evidence? Do you agree? Let's see whether we agree on the premise. At some point, it becomes attenuated enough that it can be decided as a matter of law without submitting it to the jury.
I agree. I don't believe this is that case, but I agree that there is a case out there where reasonable minds could not differ as to the materiality of the information.
Okay, so why is this not that case? Am I correct in the characterization of there were suspicions uncorroborated by evidence that the neighbors had, the neighbors passed those suspicions on without indicating that they had any actual evidence? And then why is this not the attenuated case that
we... Well, I think there's more than just the neighbor discussion, as I mentioned. I think there's the MLS listings that, you know, said you enter at your own risk. It's a dangerous house.
Well,
there's...
I mean, about meth contamination, not about the structure, any structural issues.
Well, I don't necessarily know that. I don't think we know that that MLS listing was discussing structural issues. But I agree as far as the, you know, the drug use and the criminality at the home, that information was, you know, the sellers got that information from discussions with others. That information then becomes personal to them, you know, and it becomes their personal information. They knew enough from the information they gathered from the neighbors and from others to classify the home as a meth house. If they didn't think that it was that contamination could be a potential concern, they wouldn't have called it a meth house. I do believe there is a case that could be outside of, you know, that could be over that line where a where a seller does not need to disclose. I don't think this is the case. In this case, all that we're asking that they disclose is, you know, we have information that this home was used as a criminal site. We have information that there were concerns about methamphetamine at the home. You know, we haven't tested the home. We don't know if there's contamination, but we're disclosing the information we have about the home. That's fairness. And that information should have gone to Mr. Dowd so that he could do his due diligence, just like in any other transaction. Here's a concern. You may want to look into it. You know, we don't know if it's substantiated, but it's our concern. I believe that's material information that should have been disclosed in this case. At the very least, I believe it's a jury question to make that determination, and it shouldn't be decided as a matter of law. One final point I'd like to make is that the statute does contain exceptions to the...
What if the neighbors suspected that there was water leakage in the house, but they had no evidence to support it? Would a homeowner have to disclose the suspicions that the neighbors had that there's water leakage in the house if the homeowner had no direct evidence of that?
And I see my time is up. If you mind, do you mind if I finish?
You may answer briefly.
Well, I think it depends on how that information is brought to the seller. You know, if there's details about, hey, I saw water going into your basement, et cetera, then that's probably a material issue that should be disclosed.
No, not make it parallel to this case. Not I saw water going into your basement. I saw that there was a plumber who showed up at the house several times. And then there's speculation that that's what was going on. Would that be a requirement for disclosure?
Well, I guess my answer would be it depends. and I believe that could be, you know, depending on all the facts of that case, that may be an issue that should go to a jury. Yes. I don't think this case is that vague. I think there are more facts than just, you know, the neighbor discussions with the sellers.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Tamara Novotny, and I represent the respondents, Lynn and Carrie Slordahl. And we are respectfully requesting that the court affirm the district court's decision in its entirety. Appellant Dowd's position, if it were to prevail, would fundamentally change a seller's disclosure obligations, and it would essentially rewrite the plain language of the disclosure statute. What the statute says is that a seller must disclose material facts, which the seller is aware of, that could adversely and significantly affect a buyer's use and enjoyment of the property, and that disclosure must be made in good faith and based on the seller's knowledge. Dowd's position...
Those sound like very fact-specific inquiries. My concern is that jury should have made the decision whether the possibility of methamphetamine contamination flowing from reported use in the home and whether the sellers were aware of that or whether the reports they received were significant enough to make them aware of it really should have been something for jurors to decide. Why am I wrong about that?
Well, I think it's wrong because, first of all, I would disagree that mere possibility is a fact, much less a material fact. A possibility is just something that could be out there. But more importantly,
as you answer the question, I'd like you to include this in your response to Judge Bjorkman's question. What about a circumstance where the mere possibility is something that the seller has confidence in by the seller's description of the problem or potential problem? In other words, if the seller accepts those suspicions as true. Now, I don't want you to make sure you definitely answer Judge Bjorkman's question, but I think that is more aligned with the facts of this case.
Well, and I disagree with that to some degree, and I'll explain why. I think it's not just, is it a material fact, but what did the Slordahls know? And I think a lot of what counsel has stated is quite frankly not consistent with what is in the record. There is, as he's already conceded, no evidence whatsoever that the Slordahls knew of any meth contamination, which is actually how this lawsuit was pled and what is really at issue.
But that's not how it was argued, though. I agree with you that that was what was argued in the initial pleading. But the arguments that were made to the district court were about use.
Well, he did try and spin it, I think, to some degree. But if you look at the brief that was submitted, I mean, repeatedly, for example, it was stated in their brief, the contamination of the home is the adverse and significant defect. So he was, again, talking about contamination, not simply use being
the right. Adverse. But if you have use of methamphetamine in a house, isn't contamination a very likely outcome from use in a house?
Well, if you look at the MDH guidelines that are in the record, if you have a structure where it's just been used as opposed to manufacturing, it is far less of a risk. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but contamination is less of a risk and it's less of a concern than with manufacturing, where the
statute... But isn't that a concern that a potential buyer should be able to evaluate herself?
Well, yes. But I think we also have to look at what did the sellers in this case actually know. A lot of the discussion, the argument is they knew it was a dangerous property. For example, the MLS listing described intratural risk.
Didn't they know, at least for the sake of fact-finding for the jury to consider, and didn't they know, or might a reasonable juror conclude that they knew it was a, quote, meth house, which goes beyond just use? I mean, it may be extensive use if it's a meth house, not just that some kids in the basement using meth occasionally and the parents aren't home, but it is a meth house. Don't the jurors get to draw inferences from that and make its own make their own factual findings that might support the claim?
Well, I think we have to look at that claim and where it's coming from. Counsel's argued that Lynn Slordahl referred to this house as a meth house. Apparently, that he may have jokingly made a comment that no one has thanked me for taking the meth house of the neighborhood. Now, Lynn Slordahl in his deposition denied ever stating that. There is no dispute that he has no awareness of what meth is or what it even smells like.
Doesn't that statement, that to me was very impactful. Nobody has thanked me for taking the meth house of the neighborhood. Doesn't that reflect an awareness that that's a negative thing to have the meth house in the neighborhood? And given his statement, that would support the notion that it's a material fact that should have been disclosed.
Well, again, he denies ever saying it or even knowing what meth is or what it would smell like. But if you also look at the declaration
But this is summary judgment we're talking about, right? There's conflicting evidence, correct? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to maybe dispute whether it's admissible. I mean, if you look at the affidavit, the declaration where that comes from, Mr. F. Hauser's affidavit, he doesn't say that that statement was made to him. What he says is he was present when Lynn Slordahl apparently made the statement to others.
So he could be called as a witness and testify, I heard Mr. Slordahl say this, right?
He could.
Admission of a party opponent. That's admissible evidence, isn't it?
Potentially, yes.
And your characterization of it as a joke or what he knew it meant something other, that starts to feel of the flavor of a fact-finding inquiry that the jurors get to decide, okay, yeah, he claimed it was a joke. He claimed he doesn't know what it means. The jurors don't have to believe that. A juror might say, on face value, I think that's not credible, right?
Well, I think the issue is, even if he did say it, as the district court noted and I think correctly found, it still does not establish that the Slordahls knew that there was meth contamination in this home.
But it's broader than just meth contamination. It's about whether or not meth had been used in that home. The statement, and one other thing I want to come back to is, this is an issue of whether summary judgment was appropriate. And summary judgment, we have to look at the facts in light most favorable to the non-moving party. I see a lot of the arguments in your brief go to contrary facts. And it seems like, I'm just speaking for myself, it seems like the district court did the same thing. It seems like the district court engaged in fact-finding rather than looking at the facts in light most favorable to the non-moving party. And the statement that's in the record of Lynn Slordahl referring to it as a meth house seems to indicate knowledge and you know, internalizing it. Why isn't that enough, along with all the other facts viewed in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, to appellant? Why isn't that enough to at least let it go to the jury and let the jury decide one way or another whether or not it really does rise to the level of being material or not?
I think one offhanded statement, even if it was said, again, doesn't establish personal knowledge.
But that's, you know, a statement that's a statement that he made. And we have to view that statement in the light most favorable to appellant at this stage.
But it still does not show that he had personal knowledge of meth contamination or even of meth use. I mean,
is it plausible that a reasonable juror might, not necessarily will, but might infer from the characterization of meth house that there was either extensive meth, that he believed that there was either extensive meth used in the home, or that the home was a place of manufacturing methamphetamine? Is that not a reasonable inference that a juror might draw from the statement? Not whether he knew, but whether he believed that it was a meth house and inferring these things.
I don't think a jury, you know, if you look at the record as a whole, no. I mean, Mr. Slordahl, even if he made that comment, there is no dispute that his statement or his testimony that he doesn't know what meth is, or he's not familiar with it, he doesn't know what it smells like.
That's viewing facts. Is that viewing facts in light most favorable to appellant at this stage, though?
It's looking at the record as a whole, and I think the jury and the court.
That's not our job, and that's not the district court's job at summary judgment, though.
But the court was looking at the statute, which requires that there be personal knowledge, and as I think the court correctly recognized, that statement does not show personal knowledge. What it shows at best is perhaps that Lynn Slordahl, based on the information the neighbors were telling him about the bad reputation these people had and generically saying they may have used drugs, that, yeah, maybe there was the possibility that meth was among the type of drugs that they had used. But that is far from saying he had personal knowledge, that he was actually aware that meth had been used or that there was meth contamination in the home. I mean, there's no...
Ms. Novotny, do you have any case law that supports your arguably narrow reading of the phrase personal knowledge coming as it is in a remedial disclosure statute? What case law would say would guide us to such a narrow understanding of what personal knowledge is?
Well, I mean, you can look at the definitions of what personal knowledge is, which, you know, the definitions, and we've cited this in our materials, talks about, for example, it's knowledge gained through firsthand observation or experience distinguished from a belief based on what someone else has heard. It's knowing knowledge of a matter of the truth or falsity of an allegation. Here, there's nothing to suggest that Lynn Slordahl or Carrie Slordahl had that anything that falls within those definitions. In terms of a case, I think the Cruz versus Jordan case that we discussed in our materials is particularly...
But just to be clear, if you're trying to apply an evidentiary foundational type standard, it would seem to me that if a homeowner was curious about whether her home had mold and contacted a professional, the professional comes and looks at it. The professional has some opinion about it. That would suggest the professional believes that the home has mold. You would say, under a matter of evidence, I mean, the homeowner couldn't testify that the home has mold. The homeowner can only testify to what somebody else said about the home, if the expert said it had mold. And the expert can't, the homeowner can't, you wouldn't rely upon information conveyed to the homeowner. It's got to be firsthand knowledge enough to get over an evidentiary standard. Is that your argument? And if so, how is that supported for the purpose of a disclosure statute?
I mean, I think there would be two issues. One, obviously, if the homeowner has some direct knowledge, you know, for example, they experienced a water leak, then of course they would have to disclose that. In your scenario, if they hired an expert who came in and informed them of an issue, that also would need to be disclosed. That actually relates to part of the disclosure statute, which says it's not a violation to not disclose information, which it could be discovered only by a person with expertise in a science or trade beyond the knowledge of the seller. And here, the only way that Mr. Dowd or even the Slordahls ultimately know that there was meth contamination in this home is because an expert was hired by Mr. Dowd who came in and did the necessary testing and issued a report with his findings. Prior to that, I guess, expertise, that expert testing it, no one actually would know or did know that there was meth contamination.
But doesn't that go to the fact that you need to have, you would need to have that disclosure so a buyer would know to hire an expert? I mean, they did hire an expert and they had somebody evaluate the house, but to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if, you know, an expert to review, to look at a house, to evaluate it, to see whether or not it's fit for living is going to do a test for methamphetamine. That's a separate and distinct test, right?
But it would be requiring them to disclose that based on information that they simply don't have. The information that they had from the neighbors and from the MLS report, I think by all accounts, it reflects this house was run down. That's not a surprise. It was purchased to be totally remodeled and flipped. So of course it's going to have some structural issues. Hearing that the neighbors were hooligans and partying and generically saying that they may have used drugs or alcohol. If you look at the evidence in the record, not a single neighbor told the Slordahls that they ever saw meth being used. They never
they didn't saw say them. They saw, they didn't say they saw, but they did talk about meth use in the house.
No, they did not, Your Honor. If you look at the record, there are generic references to drugs being used, that there was maybe a little bit inconsistent question asking Lynn Slordahl if they had seen any evidence of meth, and he said, no, I don't know what it smells like. But, I mean, their suspicions are hardly evidence, and that hardly makes the Slordahls aware of meth contamination or even meth use. How can people who themselves did not observe it or have any information about it and did not specifically, there's nothing in the record where a single neighbor told the Slordahls, hey, we saw or we're aware of meth being used in that property. Nowhere in the record. Mr. Counsel cannot point you to anywhere in the record where that information was ever relayed to the Slordahls.
Judge Bjorkman, I saw that you turned your microphone. Did you have a question at all? Did either panel have any other questions?
Judge Bjorkman had just asked for a case, and I was starting to refer to it. I think you got another question. I won't discuss it, but the Cruz versus Jordan case, I think it is enlightful because it's relying on similar information, which is what neighbors supposedly told people. The sellers, and that was what the buyer was relying on, was that hearsay from neighbors. And so I would just direct you to look at that case.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess what I'd like to point out here, first of all, is that the respondents obviously knew enough to call the home a meth house. So they obviously knew that there was this outlying concern. You know, we haven't, and then their concern ended up turning out to be completely accurate, because after the home was tested, after the purchase, I mean, there are levels that are 20 times the level of what is a safe remediation level. You know, the home will have to be gutted. There's $175,000 worth of damages here. So clearly they knew enough that that contamination was at least a concern. And again, I believe that it is something that at least a jury should determine was or was not a material fact.
It seems like a case of first impression on the attenuation issue that I was raising earlier about a neighbor gives information, it's not specific. The homeowner makes a statement that might reflect that there was some conclusion or belief in those statements, even though those statements weren't in themselves sufficient to make the conclusion of the homeowner certain. What is the rule of law that we would articulate to encapsulate the point that justifies reversing?
Well, I think the rule of law is that it should be a jury's determination as to whether under MnSTAT 513.55, whether information, you know, gathered through various sources, some being third-party sources, whether that information is material and whether that is information that could have an adverse and significant effect on the buyer's use and enjoyment. You know, I believe that's that this court should determine that it is properly, that is properly a jury question. It is not a summary judgment determination. And again, you know, the case law already has the standard that if reasonable minds cannot differ, the court may make a determination on a summary judgment as a matter of law that a fact is not material. But in this case, we don't have that. In my opinion, I don't think it's close. I think this is a case that should go to the jury. We haven't talked about the analogous claims that my client has for fraud and misrepresentation. I think they flow from the statutory duty. I think the big thing that we want to take away from the legislature's disclosure statute is that the legislature intended to assure fairness in a home transaction. And generally it is the law wants the parties to go into a financial transaction with eyes wide open. In this case, you know, as your honors have noted through a few questions of opposing counsel, you know, meth testing is not a usual thing that happens when a person is inspecting a home prior to their purchase, which I think makes the failed disclosure in this case all that more important, because Mr. Dowd was deprived of that opportunity to do testing that could have discovered the very problems that he has now encountered.
Which is your strongest claim, the disclosure claim, the fraud claim, or the contract claim?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, I think they all kind of flow together. I think our strongest claim is under the statute, because the statute, you know, does provide, you know, language that I think is designed to make cases, to make it into a jury determination. I think it's broad by design from the legislature. So just to conclude, in this case, residents knew enough of the home's history to call it a meth house. They didn't disclose any of that to Mr. Dowd. We believe at the very least, he's entitled to have a jury determine whether respondents' knowledge were material facts that respondents were required to disclose when selling him the home. And we respectfully request that this court reverse the district court's order granting summary judgment and remand the case to the district court for a jury trial on all of Mr. Dowd's claims. And that's all I have, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your briefing and your oral arguments. They were well done, and we appreciate that. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. That is our last case set for oral arguments today. The court is now in recess to conference. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.